This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check out BNC Pro today. You can sign up for BNC Pro and start using it right now. Manage your portfolio, get news about the portfolio or coins that you want to watch. Segregate your portfolio based on the different ways that you treat it. Maybe you have a bot, and then maybe you have something where you manually trade, or maybe you manage an account for your kids like I do. You can do all of that with BNC Pro. It's a great tool. It's ready for you to try it today. It's a terminal-like experience that really changes the game for managing your cryptocurrency portfolio. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC, and thanks so much to Brave New Coin for being a Ledger Status partner. Now here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here as usual with Josh Ulsewicz, who is on video at the moment and making ridiculous faces to me. Happy New Year, Josh. Don't choke on that drink.
Well, I'm sorry. Sorry,
if
okay.
If you think I'm not including this, then you are wrong.
We might have to restart.
No, absolutely not.
I'm good. Happy New Year 2020. Let's get that bread.
Yeah, so we were going to do kind of a mix of maybe a little bit of predictions, some personal goals, mostly within like the trading or crypto realm. Maybe we'll make some goals for some other people too. Maybe some people who notoriously make some bad decisions throughout the year. We'll see where it goes. But you know what? There's nothing like a little bit of a miniature war games, some bombings to
miniature.
Kick off of it.
Some guy well, died, bro.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not miniature.
That's as
not full scale yet
as it can get.
But yeah, it's reasonable to say that a bombing by the Americans of the second most important person in Iran, which occurred in Iraq, kicked off certainly global legacy market volatility. A dump in legacy indexes, instant pump in gold, and even more so in oil, and a little bit of a lagging effect, but perhaps still correlated to Bitcoin, which is at the moment of recording $7,362 and on the move. That's where we're at.
Yeah, volatility instantly came back. And ironically or not, it happened at the exact right time because if I was on a desert island or a deserted island, I would say to myself, oh, this is probably going to turn out to be an inverted head and shoulders. This is about the time we need that right shoulder to appear. And what do you know? Somebody gets killed from a toy drone, and all of a sudden we're moving like it's 2017 again, you know?
Yeah. And I will say, it was, we were definitely on supports when that came. Maybe it's one of those things where price just needs a reason. We definitely lagged legacy. Legacy was already panicking, and you know, futures markets were moving and all that. And then Bitcoin decided to play along as well. I do personally think it's still correlated, even if it's just an excuse for the move. I think it was still correlated to that news. Nevertheless, we're off the lows. We were flirting with dumping down hard below 6K, making new lows, all that fun stuff. Instead, it looks like we're going to stick to our range or maybe even break up out of it. So we start the new year with a dance below 7K and probably for the most part in the same relative camp as what we talked about last time, where we don't have anything by way of like confirmed trend to the upside, but there are some arguments for being nearer to the bottom. Would you argue with that?
No, I agree. I mean, let me just go through my spiel because it's the same thing. I don't know if people are sick of me or if they just like hearing me but don't really understand or hear me, you know, or they just don't want any more of me. But anyway, I don't know. I just look at the same stuff every day.
I want the spiel.
I look at the same stuff every day. So it's like you could copy what I do easily, but CME rollover. Okay, so we got that. The general idea is that we're not going to like pump or dump at the end of a contract. And we got to the end of the contract. We're now on a new.
What date was that?
December 27th is when it officially closed and then reopened on the 30th of December. So we're now a few days into the newest biannual. I haven't looked at the volumes yet. I haven't looked at the contracts being held or open interest. I haven't looked at any of that yet. But the general idea from me is, if we're starting to continue the downtrend in the beginning of the contract, we're probably not going to like make a massive move, you know, up. But you could argue, well, in April we did. Anyway, So that's good. If we just kept dumping it as soon as the contract opened, I'd be more bearish than I am currently.
So you're basically saying that you think the tone of the quarter for that contract is set by the early action.
I think so. I think, you know, if we were to dump or pump as soon as it opened, that would be a clear indicator of where we were going, I think. The hive mind. Mm-hmm. I think the most concerning thing for me that I'm seeing from a, if I'm bullish, is the USDT has just been below a dollar for since December 23rd, which is actually the longest period it's been. The market rate has been consistently below a dollar in a long time. Mm. And that's not the redemption rate, it's the market rate. People confuse that and really annoys me. But I'll send you this chart. I made this sweet little indicator that I figured out how to use PineScript on. But historically, the past 6 months, if Tether's below a dollar on Kraken, USDT, USD, then we're not bullish on the price in general. So what I really want to see is us breaking this inverted head and shoulders neckline at the same time that USDT flips above a dollar. That's probably what's going to happen.
So based on your range, a neckline breach, range breach, anything over like 7,600 or so, particularly with the daily close, seems like the magic spot for confirming a move up. I see a lot of stuff around 8,500. We've talked about that a good bit. You brought it to my attention, and then I turned on some additional charts with my own favored indicators with a lot of confluence there. So yeah, if we break up above 7,500, to me, it's about a $1,000 move that's in the cards at that point.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about this mini dump yesterday, it was pretty low volume, which is exactly what you want to see. Like, I want to see
spring action. Excuse me.
I want to see the spring. I want to see this descending volume profile since the beginning of the formation of the pattern. So it's all coming together in that respect. But we really need Tether to be above a dollar again. And I think we talked about this last podcast or somewhere. I was talking about this somewhere. I can't remember. But I think if Tether drops below a dollar while price is dumping, that signifies people exiting crypto completely versus exiting.
Yeah, you mentioned that in our show.
Yeah, okay. Versus like exiting into crypto. Because you'd think like if demand for Tether is dropping, then in a perfect like equilibrium, Bitcoin prices would go up. But in actuality, it appears as though what's happening is people are just getting out of Dodge completely.
Yeah.
You know, seeing Tether, it was at 995, which is the lowest it's been since June. I don't know. It's just, for me, that's just a massive weather vane for the market sentiment as a whole. Maybe not necessarily Bitfinex, like, you know, what you think is going on over there, but just the market in general. Okay. So there's that. So go ahead.
To try to summarize that, because I do want to get into goals, predictions, all that. Your sentiment generally trend is down, but it looks like the room on the downside trade is running out unless we kind of blast through the spots where we've already ranged down several times. So we're looking at favorable volume profiles for bullishness, I guess. And there are signs of trend reversal to the bullish side, at least up to somewhere in the 8Ks.
Right. So trend is definitely bearish. Near term, I'm bullish. The issue is if you say like 7.6, like if I don't say, or if you don't say, whoever doesn't say, oh, 7.6 is like the break point, and then it breaks, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, well, you didn't trade that, you didn't know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we'll get to the goals or whatever in a second, but another year that TA seems to do pretty well. So, you know, from the, 6 years that I've, seven at this point. Wow, it's been 7 years. 6 to 7 years that I've been in this, TA has done pretty well for crypto.
TA still kind of works.
Yeah.
Despite Joe Weisenthal or whatever that guy's name is from Bloomberg, you retweeted something that he said in 2017 where he was like, TA is a joke, but maybe numerology isn't. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think he's trolling most of the time. That's giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, he's pretty good at it. I'm in the same boat as you. I actually do have a little bit of long exposure. I was a couple hundred dollars too soon. I brought on my trade around 7,200s. Maybe mid 7,200s, basically the middle of the range. And it looked to me like we were interested in a move up, and I still have plenty of upside potential in my trade. So I'm not really something I'm sweating at the moment. And yeah, I'm looking for 8,500. Just leave it.
Yeah, I mean, we just look good. And as shitty as this war thing is with Iran, like that's not bad for Bitcoin, I don't think. There are certainly worse things that could have happened for crypto in a regulatory perspective, but global meltdown is certainly...
Yeah, I consider it another data point in my whole analysis of like what causes Bitcoin to move and what does it correlate with. And
I agree.
I think chaos is one of the places where Bitcoin has a positive correlation to chaos.
And it's not even necessarily directly correlated, but it might be like that USDC and Y thing, where it was like, you know, it's breaking 7, so people think it's bullish for crypto. So they're buying crypto. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know the term for that, but indirect correlation. I don't know, whatever it is. But
yeah, if a few dozen large traders consider it related enough, then it can become related.
Yeah.
It's just a small, it's a small market. So
yeah, it is. If there's a small float, there's more and more people holding. The UTXO stats on people holding coins over 6 months to a year just keeps increasing. So that's certainly bullish from a holder's metric.
Volatility is up for sure. I mean, BitMEX has this BVOL 24-hour volatility measure. It's up about 122%. So if nothing else, volatility is generally a good thing for crypto. When the volatility is too low, it's usually just a sign of bleeding out in various ways.
I want to see volatility. All right, I want to see volume. You're trying to get to the unfun stuff, Brian. This is the fun stuff. Go ahead.
I know you love the price. You love the price. I do too. Some people want to move on, and I want to get to the other stuff before we are too deep in the price weeds. Sure. All right. So it's 2020, and we've got a year under our belts, the past year, legacy market trading for some of us, crypto trading, combination. I want to talk about maybe some of our own trading goals, things that we would like to accomplish this year. Preface that with we both want to make money, of course, but maybe whether it's a process or if it's maybe a style or something with your discipline or who knows what. I want to hear, do you have any trading goals this year, or have you thought about like kind of your trading style and review and considered what you want to adjust?
I think it's always, like you said, make money, make sure you're letting winners run, which is probably the most important thing, I think.
And even and more difficult, important in my experience.
It's difficult, especially in crypto, but even more important than cutting losers early, I think, is letting winners run, just because most people have so little experience with that they just immediately cut everything, you know, as soon as it's up a little bit.
I ran into that on that initial break up, the one for off like low volatility 4Ks, and we just went to 5K in like 30 minutes or something. I was basically out of my position all in the middle of like one gigantic green candle, and then all I had to do was just sit there and do nothing, and I could have ridden it up to 6-7K at a minimum before we hit major resistance, and instead I was like, I better take profit because this won't last. I missed out on some of that. And then from also just the degree that a move can exaggerate, like even when you know it's overdone, like it could just kind of keep going.
Especially in crypto.
Yeah, like that. I would say everything above 10K seemed like a real exaggerated push. And like I felt like this isn't going to last. And, you know, I even got to where I was trying to like scalp shorts off 12K and then having to stop out, which is really painful when you look at it later. Like if you short 12K and you look at where you are now and you're like, how did I not make money on that? But if you do it at the wrong time, it can be a challenge. So yeah, those would be mine for Bitcoin trading.
I think I said this to myself last year, and because I wrote it on a post-it note, and it's the same thing. Like the daily cloud with the settings I use for my trading style is so good that I just need to let it do its thing. You know, like breaking above 5K, that was the go signal, and you hold until 10-7, and that's it. Like that's the trade, you know. Or yeah. you hold the short from 9-3, and you're still short. That's the trade. So like, I just need to let it do its thing, and just to a certain extent, I do on spot, but I haven't definitely taken advantage of it on leverage positions. Like I haven't been able to hold leverage positions for an extended period of time. Either I'm traveling, I get nervous, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So my goal this year is to be able to hold sizable leverage positions for an extended period of time without like feeling nervous about it, you know.
Nice.
Just let my indicator or your indicator, whoever's indicator, whatever your system is, assuming that it works, you know, just let your system be the system, and that's it. And that's why a lot of people follow the plan. That's why a lot of people automate this stuff, which is certainly understandable and makes a lot of sense, you know.
Yeah. So another goal related to this is along the lines of kind of knowing your strengths and knowing your weaknesses. And for me, I think my strengths are in taking stock of and being able to analyze the bigger picture. So trusting in daily, 3-day, weekly charts, my bias in those charts, kind of sticking with my broad-based plan in those higher time frames, Bitcoin, altcoins, doesn't matter, kind of all of the above. So one of my goals is to limit my trading. So I've set kind of an arbitrary trading floor, or a ceiling rather, in that I don't want to make more than one round trip trade per week. And really most of those I want to be smaller, like important trades. I really don't want to make more than maybe like one per month for like a really true trade entry purchase and selling of the of the asset, maybe like 12 major trades, 52 major trades in the year. That sounds like a lot, but in the scope of things, when you think of how easy it is to do a round trip trade, you could easily do that on a daily basis or whatever, every other day, something like that. In crypto, trading 30-minute charts or 5-minute charts, or, you know, like getting stuck in the weeds. And I want to try to analyze my ideas, take stock of the risk and the reward, execute the trade, let the trade run, and either take my loss or, you know, ride it to victory and trade less.
Yeah, I almost feel like I need to trade more, but I'm not really sure. Like I did well last year, so I should just keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like my sizes need to increase a little bit, maybe.
Like your percentage in a singular trade.
Yeah, I think I leverage, again, back to my leverage trading, like my sizes need to maybe increase a little bit, but maybe not, because like I did fine last year and my sizes were what they were. Yeah, I don't know. I've been staring at this same inverted head and shoulders thing for like, it's been 43 days now. And I'm in this small training group where a lot of people are focused more on like lower time frames and scalping, and like they do really well, but that's just not me, you know? So it's hard to talk to them and know them and like, you know, interact with them every day and still have like this mindset of, you know, this is my trade is going to be this inverted head and shoulders. My trade isn't going to be all this other piddly crap in between where these guys do really well, but I don't think I could do well, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm in the same boat.
Let me just finish. And it was just, this was the same thing in, you know, November through March. Like my whole perspective was, this is a ascending triangle, this is edge to edge trade, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's what I did and that worked out. So anyway, go ahead.
One of the ways I've been able to combat that, and I intend to better segregate it even in 2020, is to kind of separate my assets so that I have buckets for different things. So, you know, if you have the majority of your portfolio where you're only making, you know, larger spot trades, and then you have a percentage of your portfolio that you're willing to trade with leverage, but you're kind of sticking with a certain type of product, like a, you know, like a, whether you're trading it on some, whatever exchange with some leverage, some fixed risk when you do that. I'm interested in allocating at least a percentage of my portfolio on someone else's strategy entirely. So you mentioned the automated trades. I'm really interested in giving a friend of mine that runs a bot, just giving them a little bit of Bitcoin and letting them run with it instead, or letting their own bot run with it. And one of the biggest reasons I want to do that is because the strategy for their bot is completely different than the way I trade. Mm-hmm. And it's also got a good proven track record. So that's something I'm interested in 2020, is to try to diversify away from myself and, you know, give up some of my own portfolio to allow someone else, or like someone else's strategy, to play towards it.
Yeah, I mean, that's partly why I just bought a bunch of shit coins and I'm not going to touch them, you know? Like, that's, to me, that's a lot of, that's what a lot of people do on Twitter anyway. Not, you know, who cares, it's Twitter, but like a lot of successful people do this, I think, where they're just like, you know, they buy whatever they want to buy and then just sit on it for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, you know, and sell it at a higher price, right? Buy low, sell high.
And as we've seen just in the first couple of weeks of that, like you have to have a stomach to like just not care, not watch, because the percent down and the percent up day to day are massive sometimes on those. So you have to be able to stomach that and know your risk. So yeah, I like that you did that. This isn't the first time I've done it either. There was a time before where I put some money into a portfolio that was not in my control at all. And so that's been interesting, and just letting that roll for a while. I always consider them kind of a hedge on myself. Give something to someone else to let them control it and get it out of my head, out of my bias and all that. You know, sometimes you're going to be happy with that and sometimes not. But that's, I think it's overall a decent strategy. It's the same reason why I try to be stringent about not trading only crypto. Like I try to trade legacy markets, even when there are times where I don't feel like legacy markets have the best trade potential. Because if I'm trading inside the window of a different type of market, then it's a different way of thinking. It's a different strategy sometimes, and it allows me to diversify what I'm doing. And so far, that's paid off to where, you know, if I have a bad run in one area, it could coincide with a really good run in another, help balance things out.
Yeah, I think splitting strategies is definitely a good thing, because it's just the law of averages and variables. And, you know, like you might have a good system, but if you have a bad beat every once in a while, you might just really psychologically take a hit from that. That is difficult to recover from. So, I agree with the idea of spreading stuff out like that.
Yeah.
And I think there's, regardless of how you feel about, you know, if you're a maximalist or not, I think there's plenty of speculative opportunities, let's say, in the alternative coins, depending on how you feel about risk, like we talked about volatility. Like my fund is down 10% currently, so it's not doing too hot, but I'm not really focused on, like, my time horizon isn't this month or next month. It's like 6 months, you know? So,
yeah. And I mean, it's hard to tell with some of those. Like one of the ones, we don't have to name names, but one of the ones you put some funds into, like it went down like 25% or something. And now I'm looking at it today and it's got its highest volume candle in like years. And it's only up 5% relative to Bitcoin right this moment, but it was like 15% earlier today. It's like stuff like that happens, you know, like crazy stuff happens, and it's, you couldn't have predicted like when something like that's going to come through. So I feel like the way that you are approaching that is totally fine.
Yeah. If you're one of these people who thinks you can't time stuff and you're like pro index funds or whatever, give it a shot. You know, I don't think for the most part, it's really hard to pick like winning alts. Just look at last year. There were two, there were Tezos and Link. Everything else was really garbage. But, you know, maybe this year is your year, my year, our year. You never know. It's been how many months since alts did anything?
A lot.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe the time is right for that strategy, but we'll find out.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. When was it? I think it was
like maybe July, January. Was it?
Yeah.
I want to say like
January, February. I think it was over by March or April.
Okay. Well, in any case, alts are down in the dumps. Retail money's gone. Sentiment is poor. You know, that sort of thing.
And some people might hear that and say like, oh, well, that means they're not going to do anything. I tend to hear that and say, maybe this is a smarter time to try to be try to get in a little early on some of that. They've bled down so much.
I'm not a fan of buying weakness, but you're right. There's a point where it's like, okay, maybe now's the time to shoot my shot here. And
I wouldn't call it weakness. I would say in coins that have shown real signs of accumulation, like a sideways range where sentiment continues to be crap, but the price itself like refuses to go down further beyond existing ranges, or maybe they even made higher lows and stuff like that. And I think even Bitcoin is interesting in that, because Bitcoin's gotten real boring to people. Like Yeah. People are back to dismissing it, back to ignoring it. Like the 14K hype is over, and you know, people are talking about a whole new land of targets now. Like 6K won't hold. We're going to 3K again. We're going back to, you know, the whole, all the lower you go, the more bearish the calls get, which is usually a sign of sentiment shifting enough to where you can start to move up. And I've said this publicly, I can say it here, but I think with Bitcoin and in particular, if you're in cash and you're interested in the market, to me, anything in these 7Ks and below, all the way to about 5K, just turn your auto buy machine on and buy a little bit, dollar cost average in over some period of time that you're comfortable with, whether that's on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, whatever. Just let her run, and eventually that will probably work out for you as like kind of your most risk off way of finding exposure in a market. There's no better way to do it than dollar cost averaging.
I agree 100%, especially if you're, again, one of these people who thinks you can't time the market or thinks nobody can time the market. DCA yeah. all the way. That's what I did yeah. all through 2014. Yeah, 2014, 2015. It worked out. So yeah, you know,
and even, DCA. Even if you do think you can time it, but you don't think you're necessarily going to time it perfectly. Like two of the biggest legacy market plays I had this year were that exact scenario. Like I got really bullish. People will know that follow me on Twitter on
Don't
Bed
say
Bath
it.
And Beyond.
No.
but I had a lot of reasons for it. Basically, they had as much cash as they had market cap, and it wasn't like they were going out of business. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't have to give the spiel. The
I actually like Bed Bath and Beyond. You know, from a fundamental customer user perspective,
it's okay for you. You yeah. buy some stuff from it. Yeah.
Do you do you shop there?
Yeah, sometimes.
Maybe they should sponsor us.
Yeah, hit us up, Bed Bath & Beyond. You know you're in the dumps. Just kidding, Brave New Coin. We only want Brave New Coins money.
Oh, right.
We don't need that Bed Bath & Beyond money. we'll just trade it.
Crypto, the asset class that doesn't sleep. The markets move quickly, with profits made and lost around the clock. It's a whirlwind, and you've got to keep up. You need enhanced tools that deliver timely data and accurate analytics so you can make informed decisions. You need BNC Pro, a customizable, institutional-grade suite of applications to help you manage your crypto investments all in one place. Get accurate market data, track your trades or custom holdings, and see profit and loss at a glance. Monitor any asset, trading pair, or exchange using Brave New Coin's trusted market data. Integrate BNC Newsfeed and filter it to deliver only the news that matters to you. Never miss an opportunity. Save time and make better informed decisions. Finally, the all-in-one terminal experience you need to master this brave new asset class. BNC Pro, launching Q4 2019. Join the waitlist today at bravenewcoin.com.
Yeah, sure. No, but once it broke its end of 2018 lows, which the whole market was in the dumpster there, that was around $10. And everything under like $9, well, I didn't know it was going to go to $7.09, but I literally DCA'd in on a daily basis while it was capitulating. Like I just bought a little bit every day, a little bit every day. Every nasty red candle, it was clear capitulation to me, especially as the volume was low and then started to spike towards the end there. And once it got to the point to where I think they had more cash than market cap, or it was literally 1-to-1, then I was like, all right, whatever, just waiting now. Now we just play the waiting game. I've averaged into a risk profile that I was comfortable with, and I waited. And it ended up being basically my best trade of the year, crypto or legacy, it doesn't matter, because I averaged down to like $7.70 or something like that. And then I just rode it all the way up several times. And fortunately, the legacy products are better than crypto. So you can do things like sell covered calls, lower your cost basis further, that kind of thing. And yeah, so I had a fundamental bias, but I didn't time it perfectly. Like I didn't nail $7. I bought a little bit over the period of time for the range of the trade I was interested in. And that's how I played it. And I did something very similar with silver and gold, where, you know, they had that big pop up, but then they consolidated like Bitcoin has been doing for quite a long time. Let's see, they topped September 2019 and then didn't bottom until December 6th, 2019. And I tried and tried and tried to wait, be patient, wait till they came back to the moving averages that I was watching to look for positive response. And then finally, I got my move. But it took me a while to kind of average into those positions, be patient, choose products, because in those cases, it was me picking long call options, choosing appropriate products so that I wouldn't like lose all the premium by choosing too near dated of strikes, whatever. And then eventually they turned, and eventually the trend continued in the way that it was continuing. And that's where I see Bitcoin right now, in a very similar place to where silver and gold were not too long ago.
Yeah, I know we keep hammering on not talking about price and talking about it, but I keep looking at this this pitchfork, and I know I just added a diagonal row onto it. I know no one likes the pitchfork, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, what do you... What are your thoughts on stock to flow for this year, specifically like leading into the halving?
I don't really care. If it increases people's bullish bias, then that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I did see somebody made a comment. I feel bad. I can't credit them. But it was something like, if you credited the plus token to the reason we went to 14K, that was like 1.5% of Bitcoin. Well, if you credited that, but you're unwilling to credit the halving for reducing supply, which is reducing supply output by like 1.5% or something like that, then something's wrong with your analysis there. So I thought that was a good point. And I actually think there was something to the plus token in both the buying and the selling pressure for Bitcoin.
Obviously.
I don't think it was the only thing, but I think it was impactful. And so I think it's irresponsible to say the halving and the effect on stock to flow is not going to have something to do with it. I just don't necessarily know that it'll be like the only thing to do with it. What do you think?
I agree. I think it's a little too bullish, says the guy with the pitchfork to 33K at the end of the year. but I think we'll know very quickly whether or not post-halving, if we see miners, you know, if we see miners accumulating now and dumping post-halving, for example, if we see like we did with Litecoin, where hash rate's down 70% since halving. If we see that, I don't think we're going to see any bullishness like immediately. And we don't usually anyway. Like usually there's a lag time, you know, the supply isn't like destroyed that already existed. So
yeah,
it just, and the same thing with this plus token, like it was basically doubling the daily miners revenue, right? The selling of the Ponzi funds. So
yeah.
Now that that's gone, we're down to basically just normal miner revenue. And then you're right, the halving or halving, however you say it, is going to just decrease that even further. So that's certainly less natural selling pressure, as some people might say. So I don't know how you can't be bullish on that. There's certainly reasons to believe that it's just not going to magically pump immediately afterwards. But I think in a vacuum, it's just common sense, right?
Yeah, even if it's not the catalyst to go up, it's not bearish to reduce the supply inflation.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So you know, people saying people, that it's priced in and all this other stuff, it's like, well, okay, is it? Not really, because the supply is literally twice as much as it is going to be. So demand might be priced in. Supply certainly isn't priced in. So I don't know.
Well, we can't get away from price. So let's dive in, talk some predictions.
Well, did you have any other? How about your non-crypto goals for this year?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll show you. So I made some goals.
Talk to your you know, psychotherapist, whoever.
Yeah. So I've got an app. Like you see this app, Josh, in the video.
Yeah.
It's called the Tally app, where I can kind of count things like as I do them or as I consume, and therefore it gives me just a little bit of accountability. Because one of the things I do is I notice that I do things without really acknowledging to what degree or quantity. It's like, yeah, sure, I worked out some, or you know, I drink a lot of coffee, but I don't know exactly how much or whatever. I think coffee's fine for you, but I kind of wanted to know like how much. So I'm tracking. Here are the things that I'm tracking. My consumption, tracking my coffees per day. Currently today, I'm at 5, which is 1 over my target of 4.
5 a day?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like cups? Like cups are like...
That's cups, yeah. I could easily do 10 cups a day. Wouldn't even blink.
Jesus.
I'm at 1 alcoholic beverage this week. Also, my target for the week is 5.
Your target is like, you want to hit that target or you want to like stay below that target?
I want to stay below that target.
Okay. You
five
made it sound like
drinks in a week.
I'm like a
beer closes out my day type of guy, but I don't like slam 10 drinks on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So standing hours per week, I have a standing desk. I want to stand at least 10 hours a week. So that's about 2 hours a day. I'm already at 6 out of 10 on day 3. Kind of a nonfiction reading session, 7 a week. So 1 a day, 12 workouts a month. I have a goal of 20 books to read in the year. I read 30 last year. That's one where I nailed it, but it was almost all fiction. So I want to mix in a little nonfiction there. Personal blogging, so about once a month where I do more of a personal type blog. And then getting my kids to school, I have a tally. That's like a negative goal. It's in red. zero this month, but the goal is to
getting
keep
them
that
on time.
Yeah, getting them on time. So those are the things I'm tracking just to have a better sense of it. And with that app, I can track how many times those things occur. It's just like you click your goal and it adds one and you're done. So it's like really simple part of the flow. So that's my non-crypto stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think for me with the YouTube stuff, definitely keep doing one video a week. I'm trying to put together this, basically refresh my educational videos. Make them a little tighter, make the audio a little better, that sort of thing.
These are what I would call work goals.
Work goals, cook more meals at home. I already do most of my cooking at home.
You told me you want to travel less.
I want to travel less, which I feel like I don't travel that much anyway, but...
makes it sound to me like if we're going to hang out again this year, it means I'm going to have to make another trip to DC.
No. I would come visit you for sure, but... I don't know. Maybe it's just New York. I just don't like New York City. Maybe I'm like the one person in the world that doesn't like New York City, but...
No, I think that's fine. So these are work type goals. I got a whole... Man, I got so many goals this year. I'm just goaled out.
Instant Pot.
How about Instant Pot? There you go.
I want to master the Instant Pot. I got one of those for Christmas. They seem very interesting and intriguing. It's aligned with my... make most of my meals at home goal. Anyway, all right, that's all the goals I have, but go ahead.
So while we're on it, on the podcast front, we're pretty regular on the podcast, but I think one of my podcast goals is to 52 podcasts once a week, no breaks. And if it's not the two of us, then we'll pop in an interview or something like that. So hopefully people will stick with us for their regular podcast consumption in the crypto landscape. And our apologies for anyone who just suffered the last 5 minutes of personal goals and wasn't expecting that.
No, it's okay.
Some of my other friends that have podcasts, they're more willing to get off script than we are. But
yeah. Well, for trading, as much as I poo-pooed as well as anything in life, but as much as for trading specifically, like you need a sound mind, you need sound body, you need good, what's it called? All I can think of is vitamins and minerals. you need to be with it.
You need balance.
You need emotionally to be there. And all this sounds like garbage bullshit, but it's not, So yeah, all of it comes together in the end of the day. I think having goals is a healthy way to do it for sure.
Yeah. And the longer I trade, the more I appreciate the psychological demands and the necessity to like keep it together. Because it's tough, it's your money on the line. It's real money, even if it doesn't feel like it sometimes. And you have to treat it like that. And it's tough when you're seeing, the amount of money that you might make in a month or however long, depending on what you're trading, to disappear or be gained in the matter of hours as the trade executes. It can be psychologically wearing. So you got to prepare for how you're going to manage that and adapt if you can't. Got to figure that stuff out. Got to learn it for yourself. It's tough, but it's important to learn yourself in that regard.
Yeah, I don't think any book or any video is going to really help you with that. It's definitely like riding the bike. That's what helps you figure that stuff out. At least it did for me. So,
all right. So there is a particular chart that I'm interested in. It's the monthly Bitcoin chart, and in particular the 20 SMA, aka Bollinger Band Midline, which I'm fascinated by historically, and I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of using it as my basis for what I think is going to happen this year. We've talked before, I'm a big believer in the 200-week SMA, and this 20-month SMA also fascinates me. 200-week SMA is currently around 5,100, and we have fended off this 20-week SMA 3 months in a row so far. It's at 6,829. In my mind, our bottom for 2020 is between those two numbers, 5,100 to 6,829. To me, if we dump below, that's our accumulation range. And I think on a monthly basis, we would sustain this 20-month SMA. And essentially, I think that we'll spend the majority of our year above basically current prices, like in the 7, 8, 9, whatever Ks. That's my prediction for the year. I did get a little more specific, and I want to get your thoughts on my prediction. And you can tell me if I'm copping out, if it's too wide. But my prediction was that basically I think the 6K stuff is the bottom. If we do go lower, I think 5K would get bought strongly at that 200-week SMA. And I think that if we clear back above, what trigger number I said, maybe it was like 8,500, that I thought that we would go at least to 12K and potentially test all-time highs. My prediction for end of the year price, so December 31st, 2020, was $16,000 Bitcoin without a new all-time high in 2020, setting us up for a new all-time high in 2021. That's my prediction. You can grade it. You can counter it. Let me know what you got.
Do you think 16K is this year's high?
I think 16K is my estimate for the end of the year. I think we could go above 16K in the year. I think we're going to test if we go above kind of that catalyst number, that 85 to 9K, like clearly making new relative highs on these daily and weekly timeframes. Then to me, I think we go and breach our prior highs, like the 12.8 was a daily close. And then go range up in the highs and maybe even touch all-time high. I just think that I don't think we're going to have what it takes this year to break the all-time high. So I think we'll end the year closer to 16K.
Okay. End the year at 16. I can see that. I'm just looking at, so if you do this with TA and you just look at like the high to low of last year and this year, or, you know, the high of last year and the December low, the Fib is 17. Okay, so that's a reasonable number. It's not a new all-time high.
So the 1.618, yeah, I've got it around 18. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah. So I can definitely see that within the year. My for me, it's like if this is the bottom, near term or long term, I think there's a really good chance we see anything on this middle line pitchfork, which includes 33K by December this year.
So... You just love 33K so much.
It's on I'll get back to it when I talk about pivots, but like if this is the bottom and the pitchfork is real, there's no reason we can't go back to the median line, you know? Like, do you know how crazy 13K was sounding in March of last year?
It was super crazy sounding, and both of us were bullish. We were both getting crap for being bullish. Both of us were right while being wrong, because we were looking at 5,500, and next thing we knew, we were at 13K. So that's a perfect extrapolation. Like if I'm thinking 16K and you're like, ah, screw that, 33. it's possible. I just don't see it.
So the initial 33K... Spark was pitchfork based, which got canceled out pretty quickly. This is again a 33K pitchfork based target. So I don't know. The other thing is the R5 yearly pivot is 33K. Almost exactly.
Josh, I am so glad you said yearly pivot, because it is a tradition on this podcast to talk about yearly pivots in January. For the audience who's not a longtime listener, can you tell us about yearly pivots?
So they print January 1st every year, and they're the same throughout the year. It's just based on math, based on the highs and lows of the previous year, basically. So it prints a pivot point, which is the middle, and then resistance and support pivots in between that. And so, for instance, the 2018 yearly pivot support, we hit that in the December low. So the current pivot support is at 2,300, basically. So like if this isn't the bottom, we could see 2,300 this year. 100%. According to the pivots. If it is the bottom and we blow up all the pivots, R5 is at 33K. We've only done that a couple times historically in Bitcoin's 10-year, but it's certainly not impossible. R1 is basically the previous local high at 13K. So that'd be my first target.
It's worth noting that due to the volatility, these pivots tend to break on the support side because they go into negative numbers. So we've seen these parabolic rises in Bitcoin make it easier to achieve the resistance side on the upside than it is to achieve the support side.
Yeah.
So like when we went to 3,100, the bottom was right at the S1 and right at the 200-week SMA. And we even talked about it back then, how glorious that level was. And not very many people believed us on that. So pivots are legit. All time, one of my favorite tweets was when Hearns was talking about using the R3 as support in July 2017 in a response to you. And that was at about 1,800 Bitcoin Cash crap. And we bounced right off that R3 and then went to 20K. Like, just a massive move. So pivots are always really fun to look at. I would assign them as the type of thing you just want to have them on a chart somewhere that you remember and then keep in mind, because they tend to be quite nice when you play them back. Our 14K
pivots are like, they're like jazz. It's like the support resistances you don't see, you know, because it's all based on math. So it's definitely a thing, and they're respected pretty well. They are.
They're very well respected. I mean, even our 14K top, we wicked into the R1 for the prior year. Our R1 this year is basically the same as that, if I'm looking correctly, around 12.9. And then our R2 this year is at 18.6. And our R3 is at 23K. So this is two things that we've pointed out now that point, that's the FIB and the R2 that both point to that 18K arena. So that's interesting. That becomes interesting to me as when I was talking about like where we could go and bump into if we have a bullish year. 18K is right up that alley, in my opinion.
1-8888.
Ooh, I like that target. 1-8888.
.88.
.88. Put your cells there. Just set your cells, walk away, thank us later.
Quote me now, or what is that saying? Hear me now, quote me later. No, but it's hard to think we'll be bullish like leaning into halving, because I don't think we usually are.
Yeah, usually it lags. But nobody talked about halving as much before, did they?
Yeah, I mean, halving was huge. I guess we did break up pre-halving because of that ascending triangle. I don't know. It depends on what the chart looks like, but we gotta get above the cloud, first of all. That's really the big thing for me, which could happen.
The daily cloud?
Daily cloud's at 87 right now, basically the top of it. But I mean, that could happen by the end of February.
Yeah, and that fits all the same types of confluence that I was talking about with the hard part about pivots. You put them on your chart and then it like screws up your drawings because it zooms out so that you see this massive range. Yeah, so that 87, the 200-day SMA is at 9,200, 9,250, and that'll be moving down. So much stuff aligns between 8,500 and 9K, like just so much. To me, I think there's two bullish trades here. All right, you're a bull. You want to trade bullishly. What are the trades you look for? Trade number one, we already talked about, 7,500 to 8,500. If we hit a daily close above 7,500, open your long. Theoretically, and close it at 8,500, which is basically your resistance there. And then your stop is some number that you are comfortable with on the downside. Trade number two is more like 9,200 long hold to 18K, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 9,200, maybe with your stop at new lows or like some kind of, breach of that 200-day moving average or whatever you're into at the time. Kind of depends on what the price action looks like once we get there. But yeah, that if you think of these two different trades, mid time frame, long time frame, that long time frame one's really where you expect the money to flow in, right?
Right, just like it did in April. You know, like that's the other thing, talking about holding trades long enough. It's like most of the time I'm pretty right about, you know, we're in general on balance pretty right about a lot of things, but we're so early, you know, like we're looking at this, like I was looking at this head and shoulders thing like a couple of weeks ago at this point, but the trading, it's the hard part. Like anybody, a monkey can look at this and say, you know, this is forming here, blah, blah, blah. Great. Clout chasers will love this, right? But actually trading is the hard part. and holding it. Absolutely. You know? So back to what you were saying, I would love to take a trade from 7.5 to 8.6 even, and then let it go, see what happens from there. And then even take a trade, even re-entry at 8.6 to 12.8, let's say. I'm just looking at the daily cloud and the yearly the yearly pivots.
So yeah, using the 8.6 as support. So you don't necessarily, right. you take profit there, and then if it recaptures it, you rebuy when it touches it from the top and use it as support. That's all the theoretical.
Right.
What if it never touches it? What if we blast to 10K? The type of thing Bitcoin loves to do. Like, you got your take profit, and then it just zooms $1,000 past you while you sleep. So it's always tough on an execution front. I'm not arguing with that one bit. The 20-week SMA, the weekly Tinkin, the weekly Kijin, literally all the same price, 85 to 8600.
Yeah. There's also the bottom of the pitchfork is that, or, you know, there's a pitchfork level there too. Not that you're a fan, but...
And we are also, at this very moment, if we move up, we can save the Carpe Noctem cloud, the crypto settings weekly cloud. We're still in it. I think we're out of it on legacy settings. So mark this one up for a potential point for your cloud settings if we stay inside this weekly. Because if we ride up the side of the cloud, then we'll bust right into 8,500 over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one.
That's a tougher one to trade, but dropping out of the cloud, you know, historically not bullish. So basically to me that says, like, it doesn't say a whole lot, but it'd be nice to go ahead and make our move sooner than later.
Yeah, I'm just really focused on this pattern that could get us into an edge-to-edge situation, much like the pattern from November to March did last year.
Yeah.
Similar, you know, multi-month bullish reversal type pattern.
All right. So are you making it official that your year-end target is 33K?
Man. But here's the thing. So last year it was the, I guess it wasn't the upper maximum of the pitchfork. But so this year the median line of the pitchfork runs into 33K before the end of the year. So it's certainly possible.
But the question depends. Are you going to do it?
It depends how bottomy this bottom is, you know? It's hard
this
to make that kind of...
This is non-committal.
I know, but like, this is a trade I'd want to take, you know? I think the big thing is, like, if we get above the cloud, if we get above 8.7, then anything is possible, much like it was last year in April. You know, getting to that R1 pivot, people would have thought you were crazy if you said that in March. And people did, you know? People lost a lot of money being short, thinking we're going to 3K or going to 1K.
Short too soon.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, short too late and then short too soon after we popped. Either
short of the bottom, short of every rise up, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
All right. Well, I'll leave you hanging. I'll let you keep that hanging because we'll give it the basis of needing to make a confirmation of 8,500. So once we get over 8,500, I'll make you lock that in.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll know by Valentine's Day. I talked about this last year, Valentine's Day as well. There's a lot of like, bigger moves happening around Valentine's Day for whatever reason. If you look at last year, February 17th, we had a plus 7% move, something like that. Yeah, 7% on February 17th. So like this, I don't know, there's some weirdness around Valentine's Day, speaking of numerology and pointless numbers. So I think we'll know by Valentine's Day whether or not we're above 85.
That's random and interesting. All right. So if Bitcoin goes up, we generally assume altcoins versus the dollar will at minimum float up. What do you think on a dominance front? Do you think altcoins are going to gain some traction this year on Bitcoin, or do you think any gains are going to be temporary?
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to take for BTC dominance. I mean, basically, all the alt seasons occurred when BTC dominance broke the 200 EMA. So if you put the 200 EMA on a dominance, you'll see what I'm talking about.
You can chart that on TradingView at btc.d.
Yeah.
And there's a trend line too, that if it goes below about 68, is it 70 right now? There's a trend line that goes back all the way to January 2018 that would be broken. That would be pretty telling. It looks a little toppy, but it's not like being challenged per se. Bitcoin dominance, that is.
Yeah, so if Bitcoin dominance is above the 200, it's generally bullish. Like, it's another weather vane type thing in my mind. Like, it's bullish for crypto as a whole if we're above the 200 EMA dominance. And it's more bullish for alts if we're below it. So yeah, we're at like 70% right now, BTC dominance, based on whatever the coordinates they're using for that. Yeah, so you know, if we drop below the 200 EMA, I think we're going to have alt season. If we don't, then it's just more of the same.
Yeah, positive correlation if we stay above, and therefore your outperformance is based on choosing the right alts to keep up or outpace Bitcoin. Whereas a negative correlation, Bitcoin going down, alts going up, would require that drop below the EMA.
Like what would, I don't know what would actually make it like realistically drop below where it is, you know? Like what, how is money going to flow into alts? We don't have ICOs anymore. There's no use cases.
I guess.
There's, sure. There's no use cases, Brian. There's nothing.
China's back in on blockchain. Didn't you hear?
there's staking. That is it, which is not a use case. I'm sorry. It's just not a use case.
Yeah. I mean, I think alts have some work to do. I think there are some interesting fundamental uses out there. I agree. Like the case is not as compelling as ICOs were. ICOs were like, oh, wait, there's a brand new way to raise money and look what you can do with this. Like, look at this money grab that's available to us. There's new use cases need to be discovered, or like better use cases need to be uncovered. Like there's a project for everything under the sun. So we just need to, I think, see some of the ones that have better use cases be uncovered, in my opinion. More diligence on like their monetary policies, for instance.
It's funny that the narrative shifted. Somebody said this last year, I think, from like being Bitcoin killers to being Ethereum killers, because they realized like you can't kill Bitcoin. nothing, it's just not going to happen. You know, it's the Immaculate Conception. You're not going to have this store value ever again. Look at Hashgraph. Look at Seek. Look at Filecoin, which is about to go live this year sometime for trading. All this stuff is just. Supposedly, all this stuff is just dumping into oblivion.
Yeah.
So I don't know how dominance breaks the 200. You know, looking at all this stuff.
We'll see.
And one last thought regarding that: even if like legacy markets are roofing, obviously, and if retail is trading legacy for free without fees, basically everywhere now, why would retail jump into crypto? You know, if for nothing else than just the volatility, but why worry about volatility when you can just take a trade that's only going in one direction, you know?
Yeah, so we're talking more about price predictions today. Maybe next week we can talk more like industry predictions for the year. One of my industry predictions will be that we have a kind of return to very low or zero fee trading, because I think there's just too many exchanges competing for attention from too few eyeballs and too few trading pockets. And I think that we'll see... I think we'll see trading get cheap again, because right now there's not a lot of great places to trade for low fees or especially no fees. And I think some exchanges will figure out how to do that.
Yeah. Historically, crypto trading fees are extremely high.
Yeah. So that'll be one of my predictions, but maybe we'll make it a date to do some like crypto ecosystem, including exchange predictions next week. All right. Well, why don't we leave it there for dominance? Sounds like we've got at least a roadmap in terms of what we think for Bitcoin. Set some goals. Let's hold each other accountable. Stick into our goals. I'm a little worried about my 52 round trip trades. Overtrading is a habit of mine. So that'll be a tough one to stick to, but I'll try. Got anything left to leave us with, Josh? What you writing about right now?
I think that's it. Oh, so I just wrote about EOS. One thing I am doing this year is I'm doing TA videos for every article. So this one was a video just about EOS. And EOS is another hot pile of garbage, speaking of Hashgraph.
You know, one of my predictions was that Tezos would flip EOS, and it's still got about double the way to go. But I feel like that's one where the trajectory looks pretty good. So I'm still confident in that call, but I gave it too short of a timeline.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, because at least with Tezos, you can stake it and pretend you're playing governor, whereas EOS, you're staking it and you're giving it to China, basically. So the network is kind of super centralized in Asia, mostly in China. And so I don't know. It doesn't look good for EOS in my mind.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'll link to some of your latest articles at Brave New Coin on the show notes. Check those out. Thank you to Brave New Coin for partnering with us for this episode and this year. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check them out and get started with Brave New Coin's BNC Pro today. Thank you so much to them. Thank you, Josh, for joining me. Everybody go follow Josh at Carpe Noctem on Twitter, where he'll be live tweeting the destruction of the world in all its warring factions and the trades available to you as it all goes down. All right. We'll catch everybody next time. Have a good one.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.